Welcome everyone to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and foster care. You've been waiting for it all year and we are back with our annual adoption tax credit show. Drum roll, applause, everything please. And we are so pleased to have with us I consider them my friends, but they're also two of the leading adoption tax credit experts in the United States. We have Becky Wilmoth. She is an enrolled agent and adoption tax credit specialist at Bills Tax Service. And we also have Josh Kroll. He is the Adoption Subsidy Resource Center Coordinator at the North American Council on Adoptable Children. Hey, Josh and Becky, welcome back. And thank you so much for coming back another year to talk with us about the adoption tax credit.
Thanks for having us back.
Thank you, Don.
All right. So let's start with the big news. Okay, Josh, we'll start with you. What has changed? What is the adoption tax credit for the adoptions being claimed on 2020 federal taxes?
The amount for 2020 is $14,300. So there's a cost of living adjustment, and that's what the amount is for 2020.
Okay. And it, as you say, it's adjusted for the cost of living. So it goes up slightly every year, or it has gone up slightly every year. All right. There was a very short time where this was a refundable tax credit. It is no longer refundable. We have to say that because it's interesting to me that it was such a short time that it was refundable, that but people keep remembering back. I guess once given a good thing, it's hard to forget. But it is non-refundable, although there are organizations that are working on, including we are helping creating a family are working on making it a refundable tax credit again. Josh, if people wanted to get involved in helping to advocate for this becoming a refundable tax credit, what is the website they should go to?
AdoptionTaxCredit.org.
Okay,
and that's great. There's information with the new Congress. There isn't any current bills that are out there. They're still trying to do their start of session work, but once there are some bills introduced, they'll be listed there, and there'll be information about how to advocate for making it refundable again.
Okay, excellent. All right, Becky, what is a credit, a tax credit, and how does it differ from a deduction or some other form of savings on your taxes?
Well, Dawn, a tax credit is always more beneficial than a deduction because what a tax credit actually does, it reduces the amount of your tax liability, which is what the IRS says that your tax should be on your modified adjusted gross income. Now, the adoption tax credit, child tax credit, things like that, once your tax has been determined on your tax return, those things help cover that tax liability. Specifically, the adoption tax credit is one of the biggest individual credits that there is on your federal return. Mm-hmm. Now, a deduction is like when you itemize your deductions. I realize fewer and fewer people can itemize now because of the standard deduction was doubled. But if you're able to itemize your mortgage interest, real estate taxes, charitable contributions, those things, they actually lower your income. It still lowers your tax, but the tax credits actually help cover that tax liability, which means more of a refund for you. So the just like itemizing your deductions, that is a deduction that lowers your income. And the credit is what actually helps pay your tax liability that the IRS says you would owe on your modified adjusted gross income.
I think there's sometimes there's confusion because people say, well, I get a refund every year, so I don't pay, I'm not paying taxes. How do I then utilize the adoption tax credit? Becky, there is a fundamental misunderstanding, I believe, when it comes to how refunds work.
Absolutely. And I hear that a lot also, you know, because somebody says, well, I get a refund every year, so I don't have any tax. That's mm-hmm. not true. The difference between your tax liability and your withholding is what you get as a refund every year or what you owe. So say, for an example, you had, you know, you with your adjusted gross, modified adjusted gross income, you had $5,000 in tax liability on line 16 on your federal return, but you had $10,000 in withholding. So the difference in that is $5,000. I mean, that's not taking into consideration child tax credit, additional child tax credit, and all of those things. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, like I said, the simpler version of that is the difference between your tax liability and your withholding is what you get as a refund.
I think what a lot of people don't, if they think it through, they would realize it. But I think what some people get confused is the vast majority of us, withhold throughout the year. We're paying our taxes throughout the year in the form of withholding. So we have a tax liability. We're just paying for it as we go along. And if we overpay, we get a refund. Is that a succinct way of saying that, Becky?
Excellent.
Okay.
and that's one of the things that, you know, that we work with a lot of families is because they know they have this credit. So they know their tax liability is going to be met, you know, for the next several years. So they can actually reduce their withholding, get more on their paycheck because their tax liability is going to be met. But you are 100% correct. You know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, that withholding that you have, or if, you know, estimated payments that you may make instead of withholding, you know, those things, it's IRS is a pay-as-you-go kind of place.
Yeah, it definitely is. but now there are legitimately people who have very little federal tax liability for a variety of reasons. So Josh, if you are one of those people who actually does owe very little in federal taxes, should you still apply the credit to when you're filing your income tax?
We definitely encourage people to claim the credit, even if that won't help them that year, because let's say we were successful in 2022 in making the adoption tax credit refundable. Well, they would have to go back and amend to establish the credit, and that'd be more work. It's better to have it in place from the get-go. I mean, that's also making a big assumption that if Congress does make it refundable, that the carry forward also, but I think there's a very high chance it would work out that way. So we encourage families to file for the credit, even if they can't use it at that time.
Well, and if they couldn't use it this year on their, right, their 2020 taxes that they'll be filing in April of 2021, what would happen if the following year, for their 2021 taxes, which they would be filing in April of 2022, what would happen if they do? What if they have federal liability then? Could they apply the tax credit that they put on their tax return this year? Could they apply it next year?
Yep. So the federal adoption tax credit, when it's not refundable, a family has 6 years in which to try and use it up. So it's, you know, if they can't use any of it in year one, in year two, they'll have the full amount still available to them. So in this example, they have $14,300. And if they could use some of it up on their 2021 taxes year two, it would be available to them. So the folksy way I describe it is it's like making a big Thanksgiving meal, and you have the credit until either all the leftovers are used up, eaten up, or the leftovers go bad, which is after year six, in which case any unused credit just disappears.
Gotcha.
It also is helpful because Thanksgiving is National Adoption Month, you know, it's in
November. Yeah, yeah, I see how you did that. Yeah, that was a good tie-in. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, got it.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So what type of adoptions are included or excluded, Becky?
All types of adoption qualify for the adoption tax credit, except for the adoption of your spouse's child, step-parent adoption. The details all depend what type of adoption it is. You know, what type of adoption it is determines when to claim it, how to claim it. But absolutely, all adoptions qualify except for the spouse's child adoption.
Okay, well, let me ask you some of the one-offs that we get questions about. What about embryo adoption, which is also known as embryo donation, but sometimes it is called embryo adoption. So what about that, Becky?
The only statute that I have seen, there was two states that were trying to get it passed. If the actual embryo would not be eligible for the adoption tax credit. The only way that I see it working would be if they did a readoption after the child is born.
Okay, which is not the usual case.
Correct.
All right. What about same-sex partner, second parent adoptions, which are only in some certain states, but what about that type of adoption?
If they are married or not married?
Let's say they're not married because we already... if they were married, they would fall under step-parent adoption, which would not be covered, correct?
Correct. Then
what
yes,
if they're not married?
If they're not married, yes. If they're not married, they would qualify for the adoption tax credit.
Okay, it's kind of a backwards thing of discouraging marriage, but whatever. Okay, what about unmarried heterosexual second-parent adoptions?
They're eligible also.
Okay, so it would be the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
The marriage is the barrier.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that? Yeah. Okay, yeah. And we received this question, and it's an interesting one, and I think it's clearly the answer, but it's interesting that we received it, which is, what about surrogacy? Josh, the cost of surrogacy, which I will add, are substantial. Could that be covered?
I don't know. Becky probably knows more.
Okay, Becky?
No, it is not.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't even, to me, I mean, surrogacy is not adoption. So it's an interesting one. I can see, I could see the creative use of wishing it were, but surrogacy is not adoption. Okay. All right. Josh, can you get the credit for each adoption you complete, even if it's completed in the same year? So let's say you adopt two children, or what about adopting siblings at the same time? Do you get just one credit on your taxes?
You get a credit per child that you adopt. And if you adopt a sibling group that's more than three, you'll need to fill out a second form 8839 for lines 1 through 11, because the form 8839 only has spots for three children. And there are definitely some folks who think you can only get the credit for up to three children because that's all the spots there are. But the instructions are very clear. But if it were two different children adopted at two different times or more, they would all qualify.
Okay. The credit attaches to the child in essence. So it is,
correct.
It's not to the parents, it's to the child. So each child gets the credit. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Becky, the way that the tax code reads, you are eligible for qualified adoption expenses. So that raises the question of what is considered a qualified adoption expense for purposes of the adoption tax credit. Becky, we'll let you start with that one.
Sure. Thank you. According to IRS code, qualified adoption expenses include any and all costs directly relating to your adoption that are reasonable and necessary for your adoption. They have to be directly related to the adoption of the eligible child. That includes adoption fees, legal fees, court costs, traveling expenses, home study fees, dossiers. I mean, there's just so many things that encompass that, anything that is necessary. The only thing that does not qualify is birth mother expenses because it violates state and federal law.
What about some states have allowable birth parent expenses? Are those qualified adoption expenses?
It would be by per state.
Per state. You know what it usually comes down to, it seems like, is that there are so many, adoption is expensive enough that there are so many, well, when I say that, let me just say that does not include adopting from foster care, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, but other forms of adoption are expensive enough that you don't need to look to birth parent expenses usually in order to claim the credit.
Right.
Or that's how it feels
right.
to me. Okay. If you are adopting or are fostering, boy, do I have a fantastic resource for you. 5 free Creating a Family post-adoption or post-fostering courses. The topics are spot on to the realities of parenting, and you can't beat the price. Free. Foster parents can use these courses for their in-service continuing education. Of course, check with your agency first. These courses are brought to you by the generous support of the Jockey Being Family Foundation. You can find them at bit.ly/JBFsupport, bit.ly/JBFsupport. JBF Support. You apply the coupon code JBFstrong, all lowercase, at checkout, and the course, each with a $20 value, will end up in your cart as free. Enjoy, and thank you, Jockey Being Family, for your support. All right, now, another sticky wicket is when you can claim the adoption tax credit, because it depends on the type of adoption. So, Josh, let's turn to you, and we'll give you the easy one, if there is such a thing. Domestic infant adoption. When can you claim the adoption tax credit?
That was actually the hardest of them. So,
yeah, that's why you get paid the big bucks, Josh. Yes, indeed.
I know, but you said it was the easy one, but I'm just like, just so listeners know, that's not the case. I mean, it's not hard. It's just, it's the most complicated.
It is the most
them.
Complicated. Yes, it is.
So the domestic private adoptions, you either claim the credit the year after you paid the expense, if the adoption is not yet finalized, or if it's finalized the year after you paid the expense, or the year that you paid the expense if it's the year of finalization. So if I started the adoption journey in 2019 and I paid an agency $3,000 for home study fees and got started then, and I still haven't even been matched with a family right now, those $3,000 I paid in 2019, I can claim on my 2020 taxes because they're the year after I paid the expenses and the adoption's not yet finalized. Now, mm-hmm. the tricky part for anybody in this situation is if you don't have a child, you don't have a taxpayer ID, you can't e-file this return and you will have to paper file it. It's not anything you're doing wrong, but it just, the IRS does not mm-hmm. allow the e-file to go through without that social or taxpayer ID.
And the example you gave is a fairly realistic one, because yep. it is probably the majority of domestic infant adoptions do not take place in 1 year. So it's very yeah. logical that you would incur expenses over a couple of years, but you can then yeah. take whatever expenses the year that you have incurred, you can take them on the following year's taxes.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Well, now that we've gotten the easy one out of the way.
Yeah. Just to finish that up, so if I paid more expenses in 2020 and more expenses in 2021 and finalized in 2021, the 2020 and 2021 taxes or expenses would all be claimed on my 2021 taxes.
Gotcha.
So just to make sure we're covering the whole
yes.
timeline.
The whole timeline.
Private
Excellent.
Domestic. Yeah.
Okay. Well, since you took the hard one, I'll give you one of the easier ones. Let's talk now about international adoption. And I believe it may differ whether we're talking about international adoptions from countries that are signatories to the Hague Treaty on Adoption, which is the majority of them, or adoptions, international adoptions from countries that are non-Hague. So let's, Josh, what's the timing on claiming the adoption tax credit for international adoptions?
For internationals, they have to be finalized. That can be finalized in country, or for flexibility, if you have to readopt in the U.S., it can be when you readopt. But it's not like the private domestic where you can take it a year, you know, you can take it as you go along.
Yeah.
Right. And that was a real big struggle when Russia closed. There were a lot of families that were in $30,000, $40,000 were matched waiting to take the child home, yeah, and they were out of luck because of how the rules work for international adoptions.
So what is there a distinction between whether you're a Hague adopting from a Hague country versus a non-Hague country?
I don't remember, Becky. Calling my lifeline.
Generally, if it is a non-Hague country, you have to readopt once you get back in the United States. The Hague country, you get the certificate of citizenship, and it is recognized as final. But for a non-Hague country, readoption is required.
And let me just reiterate that with the vast majority of adoptions, the adoption is finalized in the country of the child's birth before the child enters the United States. So if that, and there are a few countries where that is not the case, so the child comes, is under a guardianship or some other parent-child relationship, the child comes to the United States, and in order for the adoption to be finalized, it has to be finalized here in the U.S. So it is when it, so let's take that scenario. When the adoption is required to be finalized here in the U.S., when can you claim, Becky, the adoption tax credit?
When it's final here.
Okay, so that is the year that you are able to claim, even if the child, and usually there is a period of time that you have to wait depending on state law.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. So what about, and I'll direct this to you, Becky. What about there are a number of families, they have a foreign adoption certificate. They have adopted in another country and they have the adoption decree is there. But they choose, just for any number of reasons, including just ease of translation and understanding, to readopt in the U.S., even though they have a finalized adoption decree. Does that change anything? There is usually a cost associated with the readoption here in the U.S. So does that change anything as to when you can claim, and can you claim your readoption expenses?
Well, what happens is if it's you have the option of when to take the adoption tax credit. If you have that certificate of citizenship and you can take it when it's final there, or if you are going to readopt, you can choose to take those when the readoption in the United States is final, and then you can combine all of those expenses together and take the readoption expenses. You can't do two separate transactions, basically. Okay. So you need to make that decision. Do you want to file, you know, let's say it's of a span over two different years, which is very possible.
Yeah.
You know, if it was, you know, final in country in 2020, you know, but you're going to readopt. So you have to make that decision. Are you going to file it when it's for the year that it's final in country, or are you going to wait and file it, you know, whenever it's final here in the United States? You do have that option. So, I mean, that can be a great benefit. Especially if
timing.
Your income is different.
Yeah. So it's a timing.
Right. It's all about the timing.
Yeah.
Right. Because your income may be higher or lower.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're going to adopt and you're in, you know, if say you're over the threshold, the income threshold for the adoption tax credit, you could wait till it's final, combine them all, and then qualify for, you know, because your income is lower.
Okay. Well, that makes really good sense. And the reality is, of course, that for international adoption, your expenses are going to far exceed how much the tax credit for this year is $14,300. There are no international adoptions for the most part. Well, I shouldn't say no, but it would be very unusual to get an international adoption for that amount. So you're going to have, your expenses are going to far exceed what the credit is. So then you can just look at timing and decide which is most beneficial from your standpoint.
Right. And the other benefit of that is the income exclusion. If they have a qualified adoption benefit, because international adoption is so expensive, you know, if they have a qualified adoption benefit with their employer, or if they don't yet, they could get their employer to, and then they could exclude that $14,300 and then take $14,300. If, let's say, their expenses, qualified expenses are $30,000, they would qualify for both income exclusion and the adoption tax credit.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, and the final type of adoption that we haven't talked about and is adopting from foster care. So Josh, when can you claim the adoption tax credit when adopting from foster care?
Well, foster care is a domestic adoption, and if for some rare reason you had qualified adoption expenses, it would work like a private domestic. But if you don't have expenses, because the child's considered special needs by the state, has been determined special needs by the state, it's the year that you finalize the adoption.
Okay. All right. Well, that leads us directly into the discussion of special needs adoption. So how does the adoption tax credit differ for adoptions from foster care, Josh?
It can apply to some adoptions outside of foster care. So we want to make that clear, but typically this is just for adoptions from foster care, and families adopting kids from foster care typically don't have any or very little expenses. And if the child is determined by the state to be special needs, which basically means the child gets an adoption assistance agreement or adoption subsidy agreement, or for those Washington state folks, adoption support agreement, then it's considered special needs and the family can claim the full amount of the credit, even if they didn't pay any qualified adoption expenses.
Okay, and you said that, so the important point here is that if you have a subsidy agreement, depending on what it's called in your state, that is what the IRS uses to determine whether the child qualifies as special needs. Is that correct?
That is correct. There was a case a few years ago where a child was adopted privately and met the state definition of special needs, but wasn't determined by the state to be special needs. And they actually lost in tax court for that family claiming the child is special needs. So the key part is the state has entered into an agreement. That is what the IRS is looking for. And there are cases where kids are adopted privately, whether a readoption or a child with significant disabilities that's eligible for SSI, that can qualify as special needs also. But the key factor for the IRS to be special needs is that adoption assistance, adoption subsidy agreement.
So what should a family do who is adopting a child with the child clearly has special needs, and they're adopting this child not through foster care? Is there anything proactive that they could do to try to be able to get the special needs benefits from adopting this child?
If it's the first adoption, they'll have to apply for SSI for that child. If they get SSI, then they apply for adoption assistance in their state of residence, even if the child was born in another state. And then they can't finalize until, you know, they have the SSI, which they then use to apply for the adoption assistance. And then they want to get that in place before they finalize the adoption.
And SSI, just for those who don't know, stands for?
Supplemental Security Income.
Gotcha.
So that would be a call to the Social Security Administration to make that determination.
Bottom line is if you are adopting a child outside of foster care that clearly has special needs, you need to consult with your tax specialist beforehand to find out what you need to do if this $14,300 is an important factor for you.
I would actually say they should probably contact our office to help guide them through the steps to do the adoption assistance, because the adoption assistance is actually a bigger long-term benefit and comes with Medicaid, which is sometimes the most crucial part.
Yes.
That these families are looking for.
And how, Josh, would they contact your office?
They can go to our website, NACAC.org, NACAC.org, or call 800-470-6665, extension 115.
Yeah, that's a tremendous resource. We give it out all the time. So, yes. Yeah. Thank you for what you do on that one.
Thank you.
Becky, what about special needs kids for international adoption? Because many of the kids coming through international adoption do have special needs.
Unfortunately, what the IRS considers special needs and what you and I consider special needs is two different things. Mm-hmm. What the IRS considers special needs is hard to place. And each state has a different criteria as to what qualifies a child as special needs. But as far as international adoption, no international adoption is considered special needs for IRS purposes.
All right. And you had alluded to this next question a little earlier, and that is, there is an income level of which if you are above, you are excluded from claiming the adoption tax credit. What is that level, Becky, in 2020?
For 2020, the phase-out range starts at $214,520, and it completely cuts you off of eligibility at $254,520. And what happens is when you are in between that income bracket range, it's cut off in increments of what you are eligible for. But if as long as your modified adjusted gross income is under the $214,520, you should, I mean, if you have the qualified expenses and everything, you should qualify for the full amount. And every year it goes up a couple thousand dollars. For 2021, it's $216,660. Up to $256,660. So, I mean, it's a pretty broad range. You know, generally $40,000 mm-hmm. is the income phase out range. And like you said, like I said, it cuts off in increments of the part that you're eligible for when you are in that income phase out range. And then when you are at the for 2020, the $254,520 is the cutoff that you do not qualify at all.
Okay, another question we often get is how the adoption tax credit can be used with self-employment taxes. Becky, why don't you take that one?
At this time, since the adoption tax credit is non-refundable, there is some things that it does not cover. And unfortunately, one of those is self-employment tax. The adoption tax credit can and will still cover your actual federal tax liability, mm-hmm. but it does not cover your self-employment tax. It doesn't cover first-time homebuyer payback, and it does not cover the 10% penalty for early retirement distribution. But with this year, there with COVID-19 and everything, there are exceptions for the distribution. If you took a retirement distribution this year, because of COVID-19, you know, if you were affected by COVID in any way, you can, in 2020, you could take that distribution and there won't be a 10% penalty. And then there's also a distribution benefit now called QBODE, which we can talk about that later. But unfortunately, it doesn't cover self-employment tax.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and talk about QBODE now. Let's go ahead and introduce that concept right now, because that's something that may impact people filing this year.
Absolutely. QBODE is actually Qualified Birth or Adoption Distribution. It's an additional adoption benefit and birth benefit as well that came into whenever the SECURE Act was signed. This is an exception that a qualified birth or adoption distribution from any eligible retirement plan up to $5,000 without the 10% penalty if you're under 59 and a half. The QBODE is limited to $5,000 per individual, not per family. It's per individual for each birth or adoption. So wife could take out the $5,000, husband could take out the $5,000, and it's for each birth or each adoption. And this is just a fabulous added benefit because we've all seen times where people, you know, have taken money out of their retirement to help fund their adoption. And, you know, they got hit with that 10% penalty because they're under 59 and a half. So this is a huge, huge benefit for adoption families and for birth families.
For families, because it is treating a child by birth and a child by adoption the same.
Correct.
Okay. Excellent. Anything else that is different this year? Because this is 2020 has been such a, well, let's be honest, weird year. Is there anything else different, Becky, as to how it might work with the people who are adopting or fostering?
The main thing is, of course, is QBOD. One of the biggest issues I have seen this year, and I do hundreds, you know, of adoption tax credit returns every year. The biggest issue, of course, has been being able to get Social Security numbers. And, you know, it's, you know, you can apply for an A-10 if you're not able to get the Social Security number for one reason, or if you're not eligible. The only issue is if you get that A-10 and you actually qualify for a Social Security number, you are going to lose out on quite a bit of credit, because with an A-10, you cannot claim child tax credit. You can only claim adoption benefits and dependent care benefit. With a Social Security number, of course, you can claim the child tax credit, the additional child tax credit. With the A-10, if you claim the other dependent credit, that's only $500.
Let me just say, A-10, when she says A-10, what she means is, I'm going to just define what that acronym is, Adoption Taxpayer Identification Number, hence A-10. Now, go ahead. I interrupted, correct, but I just wanted to make sure people knew what that was.
Oh, no, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that. So some of the things, you know, some of the pointers, you know, with the IRS is now 9 months behind on all paperwork. Just so with that being said, it's better to wait for the Social Security number and then wait until e-file opens back up in the end of January, rather than, you know, trying to send in your return paper, you know, because they are 9 months behind. And the biggest issue is that child tax credit versus the other dependent credit. You know, that's $1,500 difference. And yeah, for, you know, most adoptive families, that $1,500 makes a huge difference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is there a possibility that you could file late? I mean, would it make sense to get an extension to file late to allow the IRS to catch up? Or what do you recommend on that way?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Fascinating. All right. Yeah, the gift of 2020 just keeps on giving, right? The weirdness of 2020 just keeps on going.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk now about some people are fortunate enough to work for a company who provides benefits to their employers who adopt. How is that handled, Josh? And can you take the same expenses? I mean, is that considered double dipping? You've got benefits from your employer and you've got the adoption tax credit. How do they work together?
What would happen is they would file for an exclusion on that same form, but they can't use the same expenses to apply to the exclusion and the tax credit. So like, let's go back to your example. Let's say if it's adopted, maybe internationally, they have $30,000 in qualified adoption expenses. They got $5,000 from their employer. They would exclude the $5,000 from the employer, and then they would have remaining $25,000 in expenses to claim the adoption tax credit, which is only $14,300 for 2020. And there wouldn't be any double dipping there. The only time you'd run into double dipping is if the total costs were more than the amount of the credit plus the amount they got in benefits.
Okay, got it. So usually that has happened.
Oh, it has?
Right, it can happen. More for private domestic, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, Becky, what type of documentation do you as a tax preparer that specializes in the adoption tax credit, what type of documentation do you want your families to submit to you? And then what type of documentation will they need to submit to the IRS in order to prove that they have these expenses? And what type should they keep in their records in case they were to get audited?
Absolutely. I always recommend to everyone that they need to get a big envelope mark it IRS documentation, because in right now, since the form 8839 can be electronically filed, you no longer have to send the documentation in when you file your return. However, if you receive a letter from the IRS requesting more documentation, don't panic. I know that's easy to do when you see that letter from the IRS.
I was going to say, easier said than done. Yeah, yeah.
It is very much so. But there's, for a foster adoption, I'm going to start with it. For a foster care adoption, you will need a copy of the signed and dated subsidy agreement. Now, Josh was talking earlier, and one thing that I really want everyone to realize, some subsidy agreements don't come with a money spent. Some subsidy agreements just come made with medical. So there does not have to be a dollar amount on the subsidy agreement, but you have to have that subsidy agreement with the state. And so for foster care adoptions, they need the final judgment of adoption and the signed and dated copy of the subsidy agreement. And all of these formal documents have to be signed and dated. The IRS does not want a preliminary copy, nobody's signed and nobody's dated. However, don't ever send the original if they request documentation. Make sure and get a good copy. Now, for private domestic adoptions, of course, you will need the final judgment of adoption, and different places call it different things, decree of adoption, certificate of adoption, but it's basically the final judgment that says this adoption is final. And then they will need a copy of, signed and dated copy of their home study. And then they will need proof of all of their adoption qualified expenses. That's for domestic and for international.
Wait, what qualifies for proof of a payment?
What qualifies as proof? We have used credit card statements in the past. We've used copies of checks, you know, all of those receipts. Particularly whenever you're traveling, you know, internationally, that can be quite expensive, you know, so those travel expenses, receipts, all of those, you know, you need to keep those in a good envelope. And something else too, if you're adopting internationally, when you get back, you need to make sure you make good copies of those receipts, because receipts fade very quickly. And so, I mean, it may be, I've seen it a year or two down the road that they've got a carry forward. The adoption wasn't even final that year. They're using a carry forward, and the IRS requests documentation. So, you know, make sure you have that envelope, and you have that all, and you have it all in that envelope. That way you're not scrambling, you know, for documentation if you get that letter from the IRS.
Yes.
Becky? But if the, like the little, like I've had people ask me, you know, like, oh, this receipt from this restaurant in China is faded. But if they've got like the big dollar amounts to get them over what they need for tax credit and exclusion, they shouldn't sweat those small things, right?
Absolutely. You're right. Yeah. Because you're, for especially for international, you know, it's most of the time you're going to go way over
exactly
the amount of the credit and the income exclusion. So, you know, don't sweat those little things. Start with the big receipts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you'll likely meet the full amount of the adoption tax credit just with the your big expenses that are going to be easy to document.
Correct.
Okay. This show, as well as all the many resources provided by Creating a Family at our website, creatingafamily.org, could not and would not happen without the generous support of our partners, who not only believe in our mission of providing unbiased education and support to pre- and post-adoptive foster and kinship families, but they believe in that mission so much that they're willing to put their money where their mouth is. One such partner is Vista Del Mar. They are a licensed nonprofit adoption agency with over 65 years of experience helping to create families. They offer home study only services as well as full service infant adoption, international adoption home studies, and post adoption and foster to adopt programs. You can find them and get more information about them at vistadelmar.org. All right, perfect. Let me back up and just one. I want to touch on one thing that you just raised when we were talking. I'm going back to talking about the special needs adoption. You're adopting from foster care. Josh, it does happen that you're adopting a child. Often this happens when you're adopting an infant. And the child does not have the child does not appear at that point, at the time you're adopting, to have special needs for which the state is going to be willing to pay an adoption subsidy. But as an adoptive parent, you know that, let's give an example, that the child had been prenatally exposed to alcohol or drugs, or no prenatal care or whatever, so that you anticipate that there could be needs down the line. What should you do both in terms of with that type of, what type of subsidy agreement do you have when at this point they're not going to be willing to have a dollar amount, but from the standpoint of adoption tax credit, what does that adoption subsidy agreement need to include? Or is it a moot point because almost always it's going to include Medicaid and that would be enough?
It's not always going to cover Medicaid. It's a great question. Becky did a great job of clarifying on this issue. So it's going to depend on the state. There's probably half to maybe two-thirds of the state have what's called different things because they're states, deferred, dormant, high risk. And so like my state and your state of North Carolina have a situation where if the child's at high risk, they'll enter into a $0 agreement and provide the Medicaid and the reimbursement of non-recurring adoption expenses. There's three parts to the adoption subsidy agreement typically for every state. There's the monthly payment, the Medicaid, and the reimbursement of non-recurring adoption expenses. As long as the agreement has one of those things, the IRS is golden. There are some states where that wouldn't be available. Becky's in Illinois. They don't have that, but any kid over one is considered special needs in Illinois. Hard to place. So they would be, most of the kids in Illinois are eligible because they're one or older. But like in Texas, they don't have the high risk, and it's age 2 for children of color, age 6 for white children, sibling groups of any age qualify. So it's going to depend on the state. But if you have an agreement, an adoption assistance agreement that provides one of those three things, that is good enough. And going back to what I said earlier, for the private adoptions where the child has a disability, it would call me because that's something that I can help know what the state's qualifications are and help a family make that case if they're not being presented with it. There are some states that if you had a really young child, they might not even provide the Medicaid, but if they provide the non-recurring, that will be enough too.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Thank you. All right, because I think that is really important, particularly
it's
for people.
It's extremely
who are
important. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Those young, you know, if they're not getting that dollar support, that adoption tax credit can help with some of those expenses, especially mm-hmm. for a youngster who might still be in diapers or paying for mm-hmm. childcare.
Yeah, and this is not just about the money. Hopefully the money is going to be used to help you better parent and provide services that this child might need, even if it's not in this year, but in the future. All right. We've talked some about the issue that does come up, and it's going to be handled, it sounds like, from what Becky is saying, differently this year. And that is, when you get ready to file your taxes, you have yet to receive your Social Security number. And I think we have, this year, in the past, you were able to use your adoption tax, your ATIM, adoption taxpayer identification number. But from what you were saying, Becky, what we should do this year is make certain to file for an extension and wait until the IRS gets you the Social Security number. I just want to reiterate that. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And it's actually been for a couple of years that change has been in place.
Right. So, this is not a new issue. The biggest issue this year has been being able to get the Social Security number because
it's behind.
Everything was shut down.
So they're still running behind, if I understand it.
Yep, and it's actually the Social Security Administration that issues the Social Security numbers, not the IRS.
Okay, so it's the Social Security that's behind. So we're not getting our. It's even further behind. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay, Josh, let's talk a moment about kinship adoptions and how would kinship adoptions, which grandparents, aunts, uncles adopting, or even siblings adopting a child. Does that fall under the domestic private infant or domestic private adoption that we talked about before? Or is there something different? And does it matter whether the kinship, the child has been in the foster care system or not?
Yes, it does. So if it's what they call informal kinship, where child welfare isn't involved, they may have gotten custody, they may have intercepted the child so the child never went into care, they're going to be doing the adoption process and accessing the adoption tax credit like a private domestic adoption. Okay. If the child entered into the public foster care system and the family gets adoption subsidy, it's going to be like a foster care adoption. Being a relative does not, unless you're adopting your spouse's child, being a relative does not disqualify from accessing it. The route, if it's formal, it'll be like foster care. If it's informal, no child welfare involvement, it will be that route, private domestic route.
Okay, just as a regular private domestic adoption. Got it. Yeah. I wanted to end by asking each of you, what are the most common question or questions you have received or you generally receive about the adoption tax credit? Becky, we'll start with you.
There's two in particular. The first one that I receive the most is what qualifies for an adoption expense? And the second is when can I claim it? Those are two of the biggest questions. Because in general, as a whole, you know, it's pretty, most of the time it's pretty clear cut what type of adoption it is. So it's just, you know, when can I claim it and what qualifies?
Okay. Josh, what about you?
With what I do, cause I'm not doing taxes. So people are usually needing a different sort of help from me.
Exactly.
The biggest thing I get is people the first one is, do I need to get someone special to do this credit?
Great question.
And, you know, obviously Becky is phenomenal and folks should not hesitate to use Becky and Bill's tax service at all. But the reality is it's not super complicated. If people are already doing their taxes, they can. Or if they're using someone that is a specialty in a other part of their life, like a couple of years ago, I talked to a Colorado family that, you know, are ranchers. It's like, see if the rancher can learn up on this. Don't leave them learn up on this, because like there's only 80 or 90,000, maybe 100,000 of these filed a year. There's not that many. So see if you can educate up and stay with the specialists you're already using for your tax needs. The other biggest complaint I have is, it's sort of a complaint and it does tie into that, is, you know, my tax preparer says I can't get this credit because I don't have expenses, and you know, they have adoption subsidy. That's, you know, it's always a frustration because it's, I mean, I get it. Tax people are busy. There aren't a lot of these, but it is in the instructions. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I tell people all the time, if your person says that you don't qualify, find someone else.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't tell you the
Becky
number of
Bill's tax service.
Well, I can't tell you the number of tax preparers who listen to this and listen to this interview and are getting their information here. So you're providing a service. I would say that I think it is intimidating for a lot of tax preparers. So I sometimes think a specialist does help just in the fact that
I help other tax preparers all over the United States. So, you know, I take phone calls all the time from them because they, you know, they haven't dealt with it or they, you know, they don't understand, you know, the after effects of dealing with the IRS and all of those things. That's part of what Josh and I do, is the after effects of some of these things.
Exactly.
So, you know, definitely it's, there's nothing wrong with asking questions
of
the person who does your return. You know, if they're not versed in it or willing to, you know, like I said, find someone else.
Got it.
And for foster care adoptions, folks people have to educate their folks up if they don't know that they can get this without expenses. I mean, don't just say, oh, well, Josh was wrong, Becky was wrong. You know, my tax person said this, you need to self-advocate or shop around.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
I've amended a lot of returns because of that.
And amending a return is a bigger hassle than doing it right the first time. So do it right the first time. Amen. Mm-hmm. It's also more costly. Josh, will you give us, Josh Kroll with the North American Council on Adoptable Children, will you give us your contact information for those who are adopting a special needs child in particular? He can truly help you. Josh, will you give us your contact information one more time?
It's our website is www.nacac.org. My email is joshk@nacac.org. And my phone number is 800-470-6665, extension 115.
Becky Wilmoth, will you please tell us how people could reach out to you if they wanted to?
Absolutely. You can go to our website, www.billstaxservice.com. My email is Becky, B-E-C-K-Y, at Bills, B-I-L-L-S-T-A-X, the number 2.com. Or you can call us at our 800 number 1-888-7-ADOPT-0. Or 618-532-7223.
Thank you, Josh Kroll and Becky Wilmoth, for being with us to talk about the adoption tax credit. Let me remind everybody that the views expressed in this show are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of Creating a Family, our partners, or our underwriters. Also, keep in mind that the information given in this interview is general advice. To understand how it applies to your specific situation, you need to work with your adoption, foster care, or tax professional. As you know, the mission of Creating a Family is to provide unbiased, accurate information to help you create the family you've always wanted. And this podcast, the one you're listening to right now, is the prime way we accomplish this mission. Please tell others about this podcast so that we can help more people. You have so many options for letting the world know. Social media posting about an episode you liked, or texting a friend that you think would benefit from this show, sharing it with someone in person, or heck, you could even call someone on the phone and tell them. We would appreciate your help, however you decide to do it. Thank you so much. Take care, everyone. Thanks for being here, and I will see everyone next week.